From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, a 3,000-year-old mystery that could affect all of us. And before we get going into our program tonight, I would hope that all of you would take just a brief moment of silence, a bit of a prayer for the nearly 3,000 people who died on 9/11/2001. A tragedy will never be forgotten, and it changed us, probably forever. In a moment, Dr. Judy Wood will join us with her thoughts, her theory on what happened on that day. Regardless of your belief system in what took down those buildings and how those planes crashed into the buildings, remember this, nearly 3,000 people died tragically, jumping from buildings, dying in the rubble, firemen, policemen, responders, people working in the office buildings. Show them at least how much you care about their life. And just take a brief moment, a brief prayer for that, if you would do that. Here's what's happening. A solar flare, a strong one, is blasting its way through Earth, but the worst of its power looks like it will barely skim above the planet and not cause many problems. It's been several years since Earth has had a solar storm of this size coming from sunspots smack in the middle of the sun, according to the director of the Space Weather Prediction Center in Boulder, Colorado. New calculations from satellite data show that the worst of the energetic particles streaming from the sun likely will go north or above Earth this time. Our astronomer, Dr. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky with us. Well, looks like we may have dodged another one, Stephen. As you know, we want this grid, our power grid, insulated.
Absolutely, George. And we're kind of lucky this time, as you're reporting to the world, this particular solar flare that took off the sun as a coronal mass ejection on September the 10th, on the scale of X flares, George, which is still the most powerful, this one registers kind of like a seismic event you would have on the Richter scale, on the low end of the X scale. Good. At 1.6. So what does that mean to everybody listening? As you mentioned before and accurately, the blow may be just above the Earth itself, but sky watchers have the real good potential, and this is an interesting prediction here, a lot of astronomers agree with this, between now as we're on the radio here on Coast and maybe around 5 a.m. Pacific time, all through that window, if sky watchers in northern latitudes, of course, go outside, they see auroras a lot. But this whole window of auroras may move down, maybe even to the northern states of the United States. Some are saying that this could slightly affect GPS and what have you. But, George, you're so right. We have to prepare for the eventuality. We're told that this is going to happen. And solar physicists tell us that still, get a load of this, a 12% chance of the big one happening that you and I talk about between 2012 and 2022, George. And so the basic part of this whole thing is people go out looking in the sky, you can see the beauty of the auroras. And quickly, George, a little thing about our Sunday night report of that purported meteor that might have hit Nicaragua. So far, the meteorite might be a meteor wrong, as nobody seems to indicate any debris that may have come from a meteor or meteorite at this point. So that's something interesting, and we'll continue to update you, as we do on our websites, drsky.com. And, George, our photo group is heading to read the Reno Air Races, and we'll have great updates from one of the greatest American air shows, the Reno Air Races at photorecon.net.
You got it. Stephen, thanks for those updates. In South Dakota, an early September winter storm in the Black Hills has dumped up to 8 inches of snow in the area. While Rapid City received its earliest snowfall in more than 120 years, the snowfall in downtown Rapid City is the earliest the city has seen since 1888. As we've been reporting, in July and early August, doctors at Children's Health Care of Atlanta diagnosed 15 to 20 children a week with serious respiratory infections, a normal number for the summer months. Then pediatricians started to see more children who were having trouble breathing, more parents with worried looks on their faces. And since school started, the hospital has seen an average of 100 cases a week. Now more than 10 states around the Midwest and Southeast now have reported seeing similarly high numbers of hospitalizations for children with severe respiratory illness. The virus has sent more than 30 children a day to a Kansas City, Missouri hospital, where about 15% of the youngsters were placed in intensive care. Richard Kyle, the actor best known for playing the James Bond villain Jaws, died Wednesday at a Fresno, California hospital. The cause of death for the 74-year-old actor, not released yet. The 7-foot-2-inch Kyle was born in Detroit in 1939, won over audiences worldwide in the 1970s as the steel-toothed character Jaws in the Roger Moore Bond classics The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker. My producer, Tom Danheiser, tells me that Clyde Lewis, one of our colleagues who does his own syndicated program in many markets right before our program, may have been hospitalized again. We're going to check into that story. He was just released after he had 5 pulmonary embolisms. 1 is serious. 5 is really bad. But Clyde was able to get out of the hospital on that. Say a prayer for Clyde. We're going to check into the story and see exactly what is going on in that particular case. And if we have some more information before I'm off the air tonight, we'll pass it on to you. 10 Arab states, including Saudi Arabia, have agreed to rally with the U.S. in tackling the threat posed by the Islamic State jihadist ISIS. The agreement followed talks between Arab ministers and Secretary of State John Kerry in the Saudi city of Jeddah. Let's check in with the man who's been with us all along on this story, WorldNet Daily's Jerry Corsi. Jerry, any updates for us on ISIS?
Well, I think the critical thing today was that even though Secretary of State John Kerry was in Saudi Arabia and trying to get a coalition put together, you had Turkey, Jordan, and Egypt all say they really don't want to participate. And this is critical because Turkey and Egypt probably have the largest army and would be the most capable of helping us if the United States is not going to put the ground troops in Iraq to combat ISIS. And it's understandable why. I mean, you've got both Turkey and Jordan who are very close to, geographically close to Iraq, and then Egypt, which of course is, you know, close to, in the whole region, bordering Israel and closest to Syria. You know, Jordan and Turkey both border Syria as well. I mean, these are Sunni states, and they do not want to fight ISIS, which is a Sunni kind of renegade army. And this is one of the dynamics. The United States' natural enemies in fighting the ISIS Sunnis would be the Shiites, both Assad in Syria and Iran, but both Assad and Iran have been enemies of the United States, and it's very difficult for us now to reach over to the Shiites to try to beat back the Sunni radical insurgents in Iraq. It's very complicated, but the real fundamental dynamic here is Sunni versus Shiite.
Why don't we pull out the weaponry, Jerry, and, you know, I hate to say this, but pull out our nukes, our small tactical nukes, and do one. And just say to the world, and you say to ISIS, leave us alone.
It's tempting, George, but the problem is ISIS has achieved a foothold now, both in western Syria, controlling much of the territory in the cities, and also through eastern Iraq and northeastern Iraq. And as any of the U.S. military who have been in Iraq or Afghanistan fighting will tell you, it took us almost street-by-street fighting with ground troops coordinated with air and a high degree of intelligence in order to beat back and win Iraq to begin with, you know, after we ousted Saddam Hussein. So that kind of fighting is what's going to be required. I mean, it's hard. There's dozens of small cities in the western part of Syria and the eastern part of Iraq that are now controlled by ISIS, and very much like Hezbollah in Lebanon, these ISIS fighters blend into the citizenry. They're not just out there as an army, and you'd basically have to be destroying huge areas in order to destroy ISIS, including millions of civilians.
Well, that is true. Jerry, thanks so much. We'll continue to look for your updates. An Ohio man fell 60 feet off a cliff while sleepwalking in a national forest in Kentucky. Lucky suffered only minor injuries. 27 years old, he was camping with his friends in the Daniel Boone National Forest when he plummeted down a steep incline a few yards into his nighttime stroll. Jeez, you got to watch out for that. Well, in a moment, Dr. Judy Wood joins us. Her book, Where Did the Towers Go? We'll be talking about her thoughts on 9/11. Hard to believe, folks, it's been 13 years since that tragic day. 13 years. Where does the time go? But look how this planet has changed. Up next, Dr. Judy Wood on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. As I was mentioning, 13 years ago, of course, we saw and witnessed perhaps one of our most tragic events in our lifetime. Maybe the most tragic event we will ever see, but maybe not. Dr. Judy Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering, she has research expertise in experimental stress analysis, structural mechanics, materials characterization, and materials engineering science. Now, in the time since 9/11, she has applied her expertise to a forensic study of more than 40,000 images, hundreds of video clips, and a large volume of witness testimony pertaining to the destruction of the World Trade Center complex. Her work, Where Did the Towers Go? Judy was on with me about 3 years ago, and here she is back on Coast to Coast on this ominous day. Judy, it's a pleasure to have you back.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
In the 3 years or so that we last had you on, have you seen any new evidence or has anything changed to either continue to back up your theory or to change your mind?
It's not a theory. I deal with evidence. And as I say, you know, if you don't have enough evidence to solve a problem, you can't solve it. You don't have enough evidence. And you don't replace what you don't have with guesses and theories and speculation, because then you're solving an imaginary problem, not the real problem. And you can't solve the real problem if you don't have enough evidence. And so you can, but what evidence you do have, you can go within that. And that's what I've done. And after you collect the evidence and evaluate the evidence to determine what happened, then you go to defining what the destructive mechanism was. And in doing that, you can eliminate the impossible and then retain what's left. It's like you start out with this big circle around everything, and then you can toss stuff out of the circle that is impossible.
Judy, in your work, Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. I want you to, for those who, one, didn't hear you with me 3 years ago and are brand new to the program, tell us about this and about your work, and then we'll get into the interview.
Okay. What I did is look at all of the evidence, and starting at the beginning, you know, the issue of how fast the building went away. I don't say collapse. It didn't collapse. It went away. It turned to dust. And, you know,
pulverized, basically.
And also, it didn't burn up. It didn't slam to the ground. But most of it turned into dust in midair. I know that sounds strange, but you look at the evidence, and that's what you see. All of Manhattan was covered in, you know, ankle-deep dust. And quite, you know, went down the eastern seaboard, went up and away. How do we know that it didn't slam to the ground? Well, the seismic chart doesn't reflect that. There's no S or P wave. Those are the seismic signals that travel through the Earth.
And they should have registered something. Okay.
Yeah, it's like hitting a rock with a hammer. You know, it's like hitting a tuning fork. It should ring. Didn't. There was no detectable S or P waves for any of the five events. You know, the North Tower got a hold, South Tower got a hold, South Tower went away, North Tower went away, then Building 7 went away. For all those five events, there was no S or P waves. But in regular controlled demolitions, you get S waves and P waves and surface waves. Not only that, they calculate the seismic signal, the equivalent Richter scale reading, based on the surface wave. And even the surface waves were so weak that it was equal or less than when they blew up the Seattle King Dome. That was a 2.3 on the Richter scale. The North Tower was a 2.3 and the South Tower was a 2.1. And it should have been a lot more than that. It was equivalent to the bottom, 18 or 20 stories of building.
And there wasn't any, and Judy, there wasn't any concrete mass concrete from all those levels. It should have been all over the place. Concrete should have been in huge heaps. It was all dust, as you said.
Or not just the concrete, but everything. You know, file cabinets, chairs, desks, toilets. Toilets are easy to see, like in the junkyard, remnants of toilets. You know, shiny porcelain surfaces. There wasn't even one recognizable part of one. And there should have been over 3,000.
And I want to point out, by the way, every time we do programs on this, we do get some emails from some people who feel somewhat offended. They feel as if, we're not being patriotic because we're questioning the official version. I want to say this right now. It is healthy to be skeptic. It is healthy to investigate. And I think you really never can take the official version, which is, could be the John F. Kennedy assassination with the Warren report, or this report of the 9/11 Commission. You just can't take it at face value. You have to investigate. And Judy, what was it that you saw that got you to start looking at it and coming up with the conclusions that you came up with?
Well, on that day, we were told this is a collapse. And I grew up without a TV set, and I'm not used to listening to a TV. And if the TV is telling me something that conflicts with what I'm seeing, I just shut off my ears. And what I saw was a building turning into dust in midair, like a bubbler drinking fountain. And it wasn't a building collapsing. And like, this is bizarre, but the grown-ups will take care of it. They'll look into it. I have my job to do. It was, that mentality. But it came clear over the next year or two that nobody was looking into it. The grown-ups weren't going to fix it. Whose job was it to look into it? Not only that, I was thinking very much of the people who died there. And especially the people hanging outside the building from the 105th floor.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I felt like we owe it to them to find out what happened. And I sort of made them a promise that I would find out what happened and tell their story.
Judy, I had Richard Gage on several days ago. Richard Gage, of course, from the 2000 Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. He doesn't agree with your conclusions. And I find this important and fascinating. Both of you, of course, don't agree with the official version of what happened that day. But he doesn't believe that a free energy device or technology took those buildings. So react to that.
Yeah, I don't start with the answer and work backwards. I start with the evidence and then looking at the destructive mechanism. The towers didn't burn up and they didn't slam to the ground, but mostly turned into dust in midair. We know that because the seismic signal was inappropriate for buildings slamming to the ground. Also, the towers were built in this bathtub. It's kind of like a dike that kept out the Hudson River because they were built on bedrock 70, that's 7 times 10, 70 feet below the water table. And if you had 2 half-million-ton buildings slamming to the ground, you would have ruptured the bathtub. Didn't happen. Also, if they slammed the ground, you see a pile of stuff left over. And actually, when I first started publicly talking about this, I was heavily ridiculed and laughed at. She says that the buildings turned to dust. Isn't that funny? No, all the rubble's there. None of it turned into dust in midair. But that's changing because I've been driving this for quite a while. So if you look at that, already we can tell that, let's look at types of energy, kinetic energy. That's like a wrecking ball, a missile, a bomb that blows stuff apart. Those would have a seismic signal. They'd also launch chunks at a very fast rate that would slam into adjacent buildings. None of the adjacent buildings looked machine gun fired. Also, the debris would have to go somewhere if you blew up the building. The ground shook with a surface wave for 8 seconds, but it would take 9.5 seconds to drop a bowling ball off the roof to the ground. That's another piece of evidence that says that building didn't slam to the ground. So kinetic energy can be eliminated as a destructive mechanism. We're not talking about the device. We're talking about the mechanism of destruction. You have to first look at the mechanism, the failure mode, so to speak. And let's look at thermal energy, where the building's cooked to death. If they're cooked to death, well, you would have seen some bright blinding light. If it was high heat, you wouldn't see unburned paper flying all over the place.
No, you would not.
when the dust cloud rolled down the streets, you know, people were trying to outrun it, but they couldn't. And then it just mowed over them and went, kept on going. It just left them covered with dust. They may have had trouble breathing, but they were cooked.
Judy, when we come back, I want you to explain how a directed free energy device or technology works and where they may have been situated if those buildings came down that way. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, and of course, Dr. Judy Wood, as we talk about her conclusions about the towers and 9/11. Judy, explain how this directed free energy technology works, if you would, where the devices would have to be. Just put it in perspective for us.
Well, again, as I was saying, you first must determine what happened, and then you look at all the evidence, and then you determine what the destructive mechanism was. And you can't solve the problem unless you have enough evidence. So jumping to the answer and coming up with a theory and speculation and so forth is solving an imaginary problem. You have to go be very disciplined. I know it's tough. And the average person, especially in our current educational system, is not geared to doing that. They're geared to jumping to the answer of a multiple choice test. What happens if the correct answer is not one of the choices? So if you start with this very methodical way of going about it, you can determine as much as you can determine according to the evidence. And what the evidence shows is that you can eliminate kinetic energy as the destructive mechanism. I'm not talking about Acme Model XXX or Model 17 of the Acme Weapon Store. I'm talking about the destructive mechanism. Kinetic energy means that would mean the buildings were beaten to death, like a gravity collapse or wrecking ball or missile or bomb. Thermal energy would mean the buildings were cooked to death, lots of heat. Those two things, the evidence rules out. But directed energy, as I define it, is energy is instructed to do something differently than it normally does. Instead of the bonding forces of matter being attracted to each other, they're directed to repel each other. It's not like something physically hitting it or cooking it. And so within that, it's a big umbrella of things, but it's a, you know, energy is directed somehow to do something differently than it normally does. A lot of people are uncomfortable with that. They want to have a device, you know, an Acme model, whatever.
Yes, and well, that's how we think. I mean, to me,
right,
you know, somebody's in another building up on top of the roof aiming this huge pulse machine at all the at all the World Trade Center buildings and firing away. You're saying, hey, didn't happen like that.
Well, we don't have enough evidence to say that's what happened. But from what the evidence shows, you know, we can define that, and then we can look at parallel evidence that produces the same thing.
Well, well, let me ask you this, though, Judy, because I want to get a better understanding for this. What you're saying that some kind of directed technology took down the buildings,
yes,
correct?
And energy was directed.
Directed. Now, could it have been within the building?
Sure, it could have been anywhere.
Wait,
I'm going to be careful because, you know, the detractors will say, oh, she said it was within the building.
We're just looking at possibilities. Could it have been from a satellite?
It could have been from a variety of places, but here's an example to maybe help you let go of needing to know exactly where it is. Do you have a cell phone?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where the tower is that your cell phone connects to?
I have no idea.
Bingo. You just know that it works.
I know that it works.
And you're within the range.
That's right.
And your cell phone works, and you're within the range of the tower it connects to. You need those two things to make your phone work. And it might be a similar type thing where it's an interference like that of different energies, where you need different components. But for now, it's, you know, nothing touched. Well, here's one of the pieces of evidence. You have a steel beam flying through the air, and it's dissolving as it flies through the air. It's turning into dust, and it's not hitting anything.
That's amazing. That is amazing. I mean, just like it's like a Star Trek thing. It just poof, it's gone.
Or it's sort of like an Alka-Seltzer tablet effervescing.
Yeah.
And as I say, if people have trouble understanding that, you know, I ask them to look at the picture, and I say, okay, let's say you're going to impersonate that beam.
Could we say, Judy, that it, like, dissolves away, but at a very rapid clip?
Follow along with me here. If you're going to impersonate this beam, and you're going to, okay, so you're going to cover yourself with dust and jump off the top of the building, somebody on the ground isn't going to see that amount of dust coming off of you. Okay, so you grab a couple of bags of flour and start heaving that out on the way down. That still isn't going to account for the amount of dust you see coming out of these steel beams. And pretty soon you realize those steel beams have to be turning into dust in order to do what's getting done. And there's also a video of a steel beam falling with the dust, looks like it overtakes it, and you know that doesn't happen. It's just run out of dust. It's run out of solid. It's really turned to dust. Look at the intersection where it was supposed to land, and there aren't any solid chunks of steel down there.
How big, how much energy would you need if you're going to take down these buildings?
A lot of people like to ask that question. You know, what are the calculations? Well, what are the calculations going to show that the building's there or that's gone? Just look. Whatever was needed, there was enough. And in order to make calculations, you have to make assumptions. And remember, when you're making assumptions, you're now solving an imaginary problem, not a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why with this unusual problem, the discipline of just staying with what you know that you know that you know, and knowing that that is something separate from what you don't know, and not mixing the two or filling it in with speculation and hypotheses and theories and guesswork. But we can establish what we do know, that, you know, kinetic energy, the building wasn't beaten to death. Thermal energy, rule that out, wasn't cooked to death. And one of the easiest examples of, or piece of evidence of that, is the people at the bottom of stairwell B in Tower 1. You know, the cover image of my book that looks like, I call it the bubbler.
Yeah.
You know, in the Midwest, they call drinking fountains, you know, that are constantly going, a bubbler. That's what that looks like. And would you believe, when that picture was taken, there were people in stairwell B, right at the base of that. And they weren't squashed. They weren't beaten to death. They weren't cooked to death. And they thought they were buried under a huge pile of building. And they thought, there's no way they're going to get out by the time they, you know, they could excavate to them. They thought they had 106 stories on top of them. But it turns out that the dust had gone up and blocked out 100% of the sunlight. That's why it was dark. But when the dust cleared, they looked up and saw blue sky.
Now, tell me this, though, Judy. Tell me this. If this is all correct, and some kind of directed energy took these all down, how long do you think they would have needed to have been either pulsing at the building or however?
Wait. You're making assumptions. Again, that's dangerous, because then you're off solving an imaginary problem. If you stick with what you know that you know that you know,
what do we know?
What we do know is that the buildings weren't cooked to death and they weren't beaten to death. So that means the destructive mechanism was not kinetic energy or thermal energy. So bombs blowing up are ruled out.
They found thermite, right? Did they not?
No, they didn't find thermite. They found aluminum powder and iron oxide. Those are some of the ingredients used to make thermite. And, you know, the peer-reviewed paper, they call it peer-reviewed, that was pay-for-publishing thing, I don't disagree with it, that aluminum powder and iron oxide were found. But guess what? You know what the building was made out of?
What?
It was a steel frame building with aluminum cladding.
Jeez. All right.
So if it's turned to dust, what are you going to find in the dust? But, okay, so if let's say they're going to claim that it was thermite. What's the destructive mechanism? You know, what in that dust baggie connects to what happened to the buildings? If you can't make that connection, you don't go anywhere. And the part in my book that I talked about, I used, instead of thermite, I used chocolate chip cookies. So the buildings were turned to dust. Therefore, the dust would be expected to contain traces of all materials that were in the buildings. Finding traces of chocolate, sugar, and nano wheat flour in the dust would not prove that chocolate chip cookies turned the buildings to dust. It would not prove that these ingredients had been combined as chocolate chip cookies in the buildings, nor would it prove that such cookies were capable of turning building to dust. The same is true for thermite.
Now, there are some people, Judy, who say that planes didn't even hit those buildings. I find that preposterous.
Well, the building mostly turned to dust. Can airplanes turn buildings to dust?
No, but people saw planes hit the buildings.
But did that turn the building to powder in midair?
No, I'm not saying the planes alone may have done it, but I'm saying the planes did hit.
I'm looking at the destructive mechanism. You know, some people say there's fake planes, and some people say there's real planes. Well, fake planes can't turn a building to dust, and neither can real planes. So getting people arguing about planes and no planes or whatever is a distraction away from what happened to the building. And so I'm very focused on what happened to the building. So I don't deal with the planes.
All right, so that's not your area of expertise, basically.
Well, it's I don't also pay attention to what the operator of the technology had for breakfast. It doesn't solve what happened to the buildings. You know, that's a different issue.
There was always talk that Building 7, which apparently wasn't hit by almost with nothing, basically, was pulled. What are we talking about there? Same thing happened?
Yep, same thing. And did you know it wasn't three buildings that were destroyed that day? It wasn't four buildings that were destroyed that day. It wasn't five buildings. It wasn't six buildings. It was seven buildings that were destroyed that day. Building 4 is one that I've become fascinated with at times, where the entire main body of the building went missing. Gone. You know, gone with the wind into powder. I'm not saying, you know, disappeared or vaporized. I'm saying it's not there. You get a lot of powder around. You know, there's some scraps of stuff. But there's also images right below the ground of where that was. It was punched down a little bit into the first layer below ground, but in the parking garage, a few stories below that, you can't even tell anything happened. The lights are still on. There's maybe dustier than usual. But where'd the building go? Building 4. That was a 9-story building, but width-wise, it was, you know, bigger footprint. But it's gone. Building 3, gone except for a little shoebox at one end. Building 6, you know, someone today wrote me and said, and was saying it was like a jack-o'-lantern all carved out in the middle. Building 5 had these cylindrical holes in it. There's, you know, Building 7, it had all this stuff pouring out of it all afternoon for about 7 hours. A lot of material. And then when it went away, it made a 0.6 on the Richter scale. That's like a jackhammer.
Well, it sure is. How much energy, Judy, do you think was needed to destroy these buildings?
It could even be negative energy. If you can understand the mechanism, that's what the beauty of this is. If there's a silver lining in this, it's that this technology was used for destructive purposes, but it doesn't have to be. It could be used for good purposes, for providing free energy to the world. If you have the ability to affect, you know, the nature of matter, instead of having atoms attract each other, they're repelling each other. So if you just give it that instruction, it isn't like you have to put in a whole lot of bombs and a lot of energy that way. It could be the energy comes from the material. And actually, the dust cloud that rolled down the street, first responders that I talked to said it was cooler than ambient temperature. Not only was it not hot, it was cooler. And then it started feeling warm because, you know, when you put acid on your hands, it feels like it's burning up, but it could be room temperature. There was something in the dust that was eating on their skin. And they just couldn't, like, they're scrubbing off in the shower afterwards, and just couldn't get it out. It was interesting.
So what would happen, Judy, I don't want to get morbid here, but if a human being is in that building and gets hit with this directed energy, what happens to the human? Is the human pulverized too?
I want to, like, get away from the idea of, you know, a point-and-shoot laser beam. It's more of a field effect, like the coverage range of your cell phone. You know, it's a zone of effect. But remember the people who left the building early, they've been referred to as jumpers. I don't think they voluntarily jumped. But they somehow found themselves, you know, getting away from something, and they end up out the window. And weird other things were happening in the building. Like one woman called her husband and said, "Oh, we're going to start down the stairs, and get, you know, wet T-shirt wrapped around the head, and we'll call you on cell phone when we get to the bottom." And two or three stories later, she went out the window.
Do you ever get Dr. Wood into the who?
No, but I got as close than anybody has in the public domain. That is, I pretty much know who knows, and that's who I try to take to court.
And tell me about that.
These were contractors on the NIST report, National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Right.
And they were mandated by Congress to determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Okay.
They didn't do that. And I wrote a request for correction to NIST saying, you know, the contractors were leading them astray. And we can't sue a government agency, but we can sue contractors for fraud of a government agency. And there's a couple of the contractors, and one in particular, that had the most number of people on the contract, on the NIST report. They are developers and manufacturers of energy weapons.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Not only that, they also had, and still have, I believe, contract with the U.S. government to know everything about any weapon of mass destruction that exists or is being developed anywhere. So not only do they know what technology it is, but they know whose technology it is. Wouldn't it have been nice to have them under oath?
What happened to the suit?
The lower court judge dismissed it, saying he wasn't going to hear a case about who shot JFK or what landed on the moon.
Oh.
Excuse me, sir. Did you read this isn't about that? Did you get confused? Which...
Yeah, not that
okay,
case.
So we appeal it, and those three judges in the Court of Appeals, they were very respectful. But see, while working on the case, I couldn't talk about it and couldn't advertise it. And there was a kind of a clamp down on anybody else talking about it. Not legally, but, you know, those who didn't want this case to go forward were keeping everybody else from knowing about it. But there was only like five of us or six of us, you know, count them on one hand, who supported this case. Now, if you're those judges, what would you do? And what those judges did, and they're very respectful of me in doing this, they wrote in the written decision, they acknowledged the law applied to this case, but they're ignoring the law and dismissed the case.
Absolutely riveting, Judy. I've got to tell you, as so many people have all their different theories, this one is very frightening.
It's not a theory. It's not a theory. It's,
I know. I know the way you feel about that, but a lot of people believe that. They a lot of people do call it a theory, don't they?
Because that's what they're used to doing, is just, you know, what someone says, oh, that's a theory. And is 2 + 3, equal to 5? Is that a theory?
Shouldn't be.
If I wanted to know your height, I would start with a tape measure, not a theory. What I'm reporting here is basically that, is evidence that anyone can observe. If they look in my book, I don't tell people what to think.
Let me ask you this, and we're coming up to the break, so I may have to ask you next hour, but why do you not accept the theory or conclusion of Gage in the architects?
He doesn't present evidence. He presents theories. It is a theory.
Okay, and, but could you, you know, I asked him. I says, how in the heck could you put explosives in these buildings and nobody see it?
Yeah, you come to work one morning and the wall's missing because somebody's putting something in there and somebody doesn't notice. But not only that, is how do you detonate it? Is one of the parts of my book. I showed, just to remind people, I showed pictures of these signs you see at the side of the road saying, blasting zone ahead, turn off cell phones and two-way radios. Okay, how do you do that from Manhattan for 6 months?
Yeah, you can't. Judy, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. Dr. Judy Wood with us. Her websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be right back.